Welcome to Podcast on Infinite Earths, an unofficial DC Studios podcast. I'm your host, Porter.
And I'm your host, Tyson.
And we are writers, editors, and part-time filmmakers who love superheroes. All right, this week we are tackling the midpoint of Season 2 of Peacemaker. Tyson, what are your initial thoughts?
This is a fun episode. It did not go quite where I was expecting.
Yeah, I thought a lot of it would last a lot longer, if that makes sense. Like, all of the scenes I thought were going to be in this episode were there, but it just didn't last as long.
Yeah, the timing seemed different than I expected, but I didn't hate it. It flowed really well.
Yeah, I mean, we start out with Rick Flag Jr.'s funeral, which it was kind of a cool scene. We got to see Rick Flag Sr. talking to Harcourt. We get confirmation that he knew that his son loved Harcourt, and we kind of get to see him being like, no, call me Rick. And she says, like, I'll promise to make whoever did this pay, which I guess we kind of get a mini arc, because by the end of the episode, she's kind of not feeling that way.
Oh, for sure.
But
it kind of explains why she was so cold towards him to start. I mean, you know, beyond having worked with him on the Corto Maltese mission and saying that he's just not a great dude, she did have some really, like, malicious feelings towards him in season one. So despite, you know, her kind of hating him so much, she still has like some love in her heart for him to the extent that she thinks he's worth saving at the end of the episode.
Yeah, this is definitely an episode where we finally get a bit more of a glimpse into Harcourt outside of just how she's really upset about her job prospects. We kind of get to see more character decisions. Like, we have the park scene where they're going to do the ambush, and we find out that, well, it was funny because in the, like, previously on, it showed the text where Peacemaker's like, I need to meet with you. And she says, copacetic. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. And I Googled it and I was like, oh, it means like everything is in excellent order. And we're just like, weirdo.
It's a weird way to say
yeah,
that.
Okay. And then like almost immediately in the episode, we find out that it's like their warning word. Like if either of them says it, that means like go the other direction. But Peacemaker still shows up, and we do get like a funny little like him running through the park, making sure that like no sniper could get a clean shot.
Which is funny because he's doing all these things and you're like, he definitely knows. And I was like, there's no way he knows. Like, he's just being Peacemaker. He's saying hi to dogs. He's like messing around with the kids. And then he like sits down and grabs the mic from her. And I was
like immediately.
Oh, shoot. He definitely knew. Switches places with her. So like she's in the line of fire. And we find out this like burning question that he's been dying to ask her since last episode. And the reason that despite her giving this like stay away warning, he needed to see her. And he just asks, was there anything real between us? Right. Like, do you have real
feelings
for me?
Right. Do I mean anything?
Yeah. She doesn't really let him off easy. She's pretty clear that she was drunk and she feels next to nothing towards him.
Now, do you think that's true? Or how much of that do you think is true, do you think? Because it could be possible she's just trying to get him to, like, leave, like, as soon as possible.
That's totally possible.
I think it's, like, 60% true. Like, she means it, but
clearly there's something there.
Yeah.
Not romantic, per se,
no.
But I don't think she hates him like she used to. At the very least, she feels quite differently towards him than the new universe's Harcourt.
Yeah. No kidding. Peacemaker does ask her, though, if her and Rick Flag Jr. were a thing.
Yeah.
So now he knows for certain.
Yeah.
That's a factor.
Yeah. And then after this, I have no idea how he's supposed to escape, because he's literally just in a public area surrounded by agents. And he starts his escape plan by breaking this guy's wrist and then using him as a human shield, grabs his gun. Like, he's doing the Peacemaker thing.
He is still a trained killer, right?
He really is. We get kind of this first reveal of Sasha Bordeaux, who I looked up after the last episode. I was kind of curious about her as a character and found out that as revealed in this episode, she's actually a cyborg.
Yeah, I did not see that coming.
It's kind of a crazy, I mean, she's completely human looking. She acts like one, and it's a very subtle reveal, but we get kind of that Tony Stark, like Iron Man mask in her eye kind of feel, right? That cool little graphic where it's like, oh, there's computery things happening. And she is trying to shoot to kill, and Hardcore recognizing that just takes him down to like avoid that, which I think is another sign that, you know, she doesn't hate him enough to let him die.
Exactly. Yeah, seriously.
Something interesting about Sasha Bordeaux in other comics, at least, is she kind of has a lot of power. She's like a cyborg, essentially, but she has like healing factors, you know, advanced ways to communicate with technology. And in some comics, she actually was bodyguard for and fell in love with Bruce Wayne and Batman.
That would be wild if that happened in this universe.
Oh, it'd be such a crazy arc. But anyways, fun comic book character for them to pull
totally
out.
Totally some fun trivia knowledge. Just
yeah, and we get just them bringing in Peacemaker in cuffs, which is not the first time this has happened to him.
Yeah, and here we kind of get that scene from the trailer where we see Rick Sr. really confronting Peacemaker about his son, and we get that line like, he was a better man than you will ever be or I could ever be. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a crazy scene though, because a little bit before that we get Economos and Harcourt talking, and it's clear that they both want to get Peacemaker out of there. Economos is like, okay, I'll book him, like I'll log him into the system so that now it's on record that we have him in custody.
Which I love Economos's character, because he's kind of a reluctant hero throughout both seasons, where people just almost coerce him into doing what they want him to do and or the right thing.
Right.
And he's like, God, fine, I'll do it. And that was absolutely the case in this one. But he does it. He books her, and that, you know, makes it aware enough for the bigwigs up top that, you know, they can't necessarily kill him.
Yeah.
Which it looks like Rick Flag is intent on doing.
Yeah, he like his hands were around his throat.
Right. Murder in
Sasha
his eyes.
Sasha came in.
And he gives the little caveat when Sasha comes in later, about like, no, like I wouldn't kill him if we wanted to get information about him, right? Yeah. It's like, obviously they think I'm unhinged, but he didn't ask Peacemaker a single question about the location of the dimensional device. I think part of that is calculating and part of that is unhinged.
Yeah, like he said, he's not going to lie, he enjoyed some of it. But I do think that it would play better into that idea of, well, Rick just wants revenge. He's not interested in the portal, right? Despite what Economos has told us, because he never even asked me anything about the portal. He was just mad. But I don't know. I did like that scene, though, where he was like, way calm afterwards and just like, yeah, whatever. But I don't know, makes you realize like, yeah, he is a very intelligent person, and we obviously saw a lot of that in Creature Commandos, but here we get to see it kind of work against our protagonist, which is kind of a interesting perspective. And then like immediately after that, there's like a weird Rick and Sasha are like flirting with each other. I don't know, man.
It's a little strange, but it's clear there's something there and they don't really want others finding out about it, because we then get Peacemaker getting let go, gets to go back to his place, and Judo Master follows him and, you know, gives them the location. There's kind of this great buildup. We get Langston trying to give them that info, and they're just in that like real like weird like high school like way too close
laughing.
Yeah, but before all of this, we finally get Red St. Wild back, and he is using all of the tricks up his sleeve.
Oh my gosh, when he pulls out that case and he has like a Looney Tunes sized gun. Oh my gosh.
I really thought he was going to get him with the first gimmick, the poisoned rat.
Yeah, that was close.
Yeah, but thankfully, Vigilante. anyways, we get kind of this crazy sequence with him trying to kill the Great Eagle, which this doesn't necessarily drive the story forward. It's just a fun aside.
Oh, totally.
And then it just turns buck wild. Like,
Yeah. God. Like he thinks he got Eagly, and
which we Chris were blown like, away. We were like, oh no.
Well, yeah, because like Chris is whistling for him and he's not coming, and then he you shot a bald eagle.
Dead eagle on the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, holy crap. But then you have like 20 eagles pull up and you find out that he is the prime eagle. And it has like the symbol flash above. Like,
such a crazy crap. And epic moment. And then they just kill him.
Yeah. Pecked to death by eagles. If he never comes back, like, that was a well-lived plot. Just fun. Like I said, Looney Tunes-esque. Just, I enjoyed it. Kind of balances the heavier stuff, right?
Totally. Totally. A very strange build-up to a semi-satisfying ending. Like, it fit well. I mean, after all this going down and getting beat nearly to death, Chris is pretty fed up with this universe, which we kind of guessed was going to happen. I mean, that seems the natural push towards going to the other dimension.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting the way that he approaches it. I mean, you know, he kind of just shoos away Adebayo and Vigilante and just kind of writes. I was thinking of it in terms almost of like a suicide note, right? Because it's kind of a final goodbye.
He is not planning on seeing them again.
Yeah. Which is sad.
It really is. And I did find it interesting that, like you said, with Adebayo and Vigilante, he kind of just brushes it off like, oh, I just need to be alone. Like zero preemptive, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, the last, like, in, I guess, close communication they get is this text just saying, we'll see you around, be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's clear he is in a pretty broken place right now. I mean, he firmly believes that Harcourt just took him out, even though his masterful plan to get out of there definitely would have worked.
Yeah, for real.
Because she just hates him, right? She just wants to get ahead in Argus, and he was her ticket up. He just believes the new universe is the way to go. But he's not only going to the new universe, he's almost ensuring that nobody can follow him, which was kind of a conflict I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, smart move, because I did have, because we talked about it last episode where we were like, do they just follow him? You know, like what? But no, he turns off the portal with the alien device, but now the gang kind of has a way to possibly figure out how to reopen it.
Right. He made sure that they got the device, but he made it, you know, difficult. They don't really know how to set it up.
Yeah, he hasn't taught anyone.
Right. We did get Judo Master following him.
Yeah, and he left a note as well. It just said followed him or something simple.
Which is funny. I didn't see Argus find that when they stormed the cabin. At least they didn't make note of it. I don't know if Adebayo and Vigilante grabbed it on their way out just to make sure they couldn't see it. Thought
they grabbed it. I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know. But yeah, they, from Argus's perspective, they're like, where did Judo Master go? Yeah.
Which, it begs the question, I'm curious if he got, like, if he followed Peacemaker into the other dimension, or if he's just in this massive white waiting room, trying doors to find him.
That's a good point. It does look like a maze. Would Judo Master know the code to the door to, like, get in? Because remember, Peacemaker said, like, oh, I just tried this door. It looked like my dad's.
That is an excellent question. And it had
the same code.
That would be a bit of a plot hole if they just jumped to Judo Master being in his universe.
Yeah.
Because he would have no he's never been to that house before.
No. So unless, like, Argus told him prior.
Which they couldn't have. They had Economos hack that.
That's true. Yeah, we'll see, I guess.
I'm curious how that'll play out. At the very least, there's some sort of adversity towards him, even though we get this really sweet sequence of him literally flying high. This new universe seems to be the perfect setup for him.
Yeah, he's like, has Eagly there now, so now it's absolutely perfect, right? And Keith is like, hey, we got to go fight a kaiju.
Which I didn't put together at first.
Well, I was just like, I don't know. Kaiju's kind of a blanket term, right?
Yeah, just a big old monster.
Dude, the one from Superman, that's awesome.
That was so much fun. We get like the news report, and I don't know about you, but I thought that was like in universe here. And I was like, wasn't that a while ago?
Right.
And then it was like, nope, new universe. We get like the brighter dressed Harcourt right. and a guts covered Peacemaker. And they like kind of reunite for what seems to be a kiss. There's like this really neat cut where it's like right before, but it seems to be coming up all Peacemaker. Like he is absolutely winning in this new universe.
Yeah, I wonder how many episodes that'll last for, you know, before it starts to get iffy.
Oh, for sure. Well, and I'm curious if, like, it will get iffy in this universe, or if the conflict will simply be his friends pulling up and essentially exposing him, right? If it will be, like, the nefarious new universe, there's something he didn't know about, or it'll just be them being like, this isn't your world. Hey, just guys, did you know that he killed the other one? Like,
yeah.
They could mess that up for him real fast, but the friends are very willing to go after him. They clearly care about him, which is neat. And one thing that kind of surprised me was, strangely enough, it was Vigilante crying.
Yeah.
Because they made a big...
After, like, he... Adebayo, like, read the note.
Yeah. Because they made a big point about him being, like, emotionless. He's, like, very socially unsavvy. Like, he... That emotions aren't his bag, right? That's not his thing. Yeah. He's comedic relief. So him like having a bit of a breakdown over Chris leaving is kind of a heavy hitting moment, more so than anybody else having like a somber moment. But he cheers right back up when they start this new plan. He's excited about finding another him.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're going to go. That was a fun way that they're all back together and they have a common goal. They're going to go find Chris and bring him back because they care about him enough that they want him in their universe, which is awesome thing.
It's a great team dynamic. And once again, I'm quite liking how they're handling this like multiple dimension arc, because as we know in superhero movies, that's not always like the easiest thing to do.
No, they're pulling it off pretty smoothly for now.
So in other news, nothing major, but there are talks about who the new villain will be in the Batman 2.
Yeah, okay. I'm curious what your thought is.
Well, Matt Reeves explicitly said it's never really been done in a movie before, which people are arguing about whether that means it's never been done cinematically, like it's just a villain we've never seen, or if it's just a completely different take, kind of that like absolute Batman feel, like who would have thought of the villain in this way?
Okay.
Personally, fingers crossed for Kite Man, but...
Yeah, right. Seriously.
There are really so many villains it could be. Batman probably has the most impressive catalog of villains.
I saw an article that made the point that it could be the Court of Owls because it would fit the aesthetic of that universe. And it was in Gotham, the TV show. And they're thinking that because of the way it was phrased specifically, like hasn't been done in a movie, that they're like, oh, so like that's not ruling out TV shows. So that's where they're leaning. And I get it. Like, I think that would be a really cool choice. And I feel like it would kind of work with the whole underground, underworld vibe. Just like I said, fits the aesthetics of the Batman very well.
Oh, totally. Well, and I mean, in a Gotham that's rebuilding, the only thing, you know, more scary than like a terrorist, because it's already been terrorized, is kind of a secret society that's like almost impossible to fight against.
Right, like an Illuminati thing.
Totally. No, you make a great point about that fitting the aesthetic. And I mean, they're in talks right now about a Penguin season 2. So that would probably, you know, flow very nicely into that if that were something that they were trying to create in that universe.
That would be awesome.
I'm almost curious. They say it hasn't been done in a movie before. And obviously it's an animated film, but I'm curious if they'd go for the Hush storyline. Because I feel like...
Oh, that could fit. Yeah.
That would work well in this universe.
Okay, here's my counter argument to that. In the Hush storyline, it involves a lot of different characters from not only the DC universe, but just Batman's rogues gallery. And seeing as they only have like 2.5, I'm counting the half as the Joker because he was like teased. That I don't know how they definitely could still do an extremely similar thing. Another counter argument is that Hush is a serial killer storyline. that is written by the same guy that did The Long Halloween, which is like one of my favorites.
Mm.
The first Batman, that Riddler, feels very much based off of, you know, those serial killer stories.
Okay, those are some great points.
Yeah, but I'm not knocking it. Like, if he ends up being the villain, I'm going to be hyped. I think he's a great villain. I just don't know how plausible that would be.
That's fair. It's kind of hard to think of the B-side villains that they could make work, because Riddler feels like a B-side villain.
Right.
He's pretty gimmicky. He has like the green suit with the question marks, and they made him so freaking scary.
Yeah.
Same with the Penguin. So I feel like it's kind of hard to count anybody out. Even my joke recommendation of Kite Man.
Right.
Like with this universe that they've built up, and kind of just the brilliant minds of Matt Reeves and James Gunn, it seems like they really could quite plausibly make even Calendar Man a malicious...
anything cool.
Yeah.
I had the thought before Matt Reeves had commented that Mr. Freeze would be a cool idea, because while we all know Arnold Schwarzenegger played him in Batman and Robin, and he's arguably like one of the few things worth watching about that film. I would have loved to have seen a depiction of Mr. Freeze, but in this like really dark and grounded world. But now that he said that it hasn't been done in a movie before, I'm like, okay, that rules that out.
It seems iffy. Once again, people are speculating whether that means literally,
right,
or just this rendition. People aren't sure, but you make a great point. Victor Freeze has such a great and gritty backstory. It would fit very well in this universe.
For sure. It would be cool. And it would be good to have a villain that, one of those villains that you can really understand why they're doing what they're doing. Like, he's not just like Mr. Bad Guy. He has a wife that he's trying to cure, right? He's not robbing a bank for personal gain. He's trying to rob a bank to get equipment to do research.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
he's a villain you can kind of root for.
Yeah. Which is why like Heart of Ice is one of the most famous episodes from Batman, the animated series.
Yeah. As a kid, I remember that being kind of heart wrenching, because I was like, right, he's a guy. Like, he.
Yeah. Right.
He's got so much love in his heart. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
I think the final question about the possible villains in Batman is, do you think they'll take sort of a metahuman turn with it, or if they'll kind of maintain this grounded possible feel to it? Because I mean, that was the Riddler, right? Is just this scary smart but just serial killer feel. I mean, this Batman, I've said it a lot, is the most accessible Batman. He is like the most believable in that sense, right? Where, you know,
right,
he gets hit, he gets hurt,
his
Batmobile is just
a muscle car.
Yeah. It's just souped up, and I feel like the Dark Knight did a great job with that, but there still were some elements where they were just like, it just kind of is that way, you know?
Right.
But this one, like, it is so, so real.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's why I'm telling you, I really thought Mr. Freeze would be that good in-between of, like, more of a fantastical villain, but you could ground him in a lot of ways.
A scientific explanation, sure.
But, yeah, I don't know. I'll have to do some thinking about that.
Extremely excited for it, though. Glad that they got the script in a place that they're feeling good about, and that they're working on getting the shooting schedule set up, because holy cow, I loved that first movie, and I can't help but hope that the sequel will be a knockout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in most cases, I feel confident that if they didn't like the story that they were writing for the Batman Part 2, I have confidence that they would have scrapped it, because it sounds like they've had a couple of movies, for sure one movie, that the script was like, the story was good, they had a great director attached, but just the script wasn't working, so they had to scrap it. And I understand that that could have been a really vague side project, but something tells me that they could have, or would have, I should say, just done away with this Batman Part 2 sequel if it really wasn't working out.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, with all like the I say B-side and air quotes movies and shows that they're coming out with, it definitely feels like, you know, any of these could have been like a side project, but it's kind of exciting the direction that they're taking it. And I feel like that's kind of the cool part about this is because a lot of them are like B-side feels, you really can just push something to the back burner if it's just not cooking right now.
Right.
But you make a great point about the Batman too. I mean, there's kind of a lot of pressure around that. And I'm just glad that, you know, even though there were rewrites and kind of, you know, pushing back the first draft dates, like time after time, like they feel like they're in a good place right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. It'd be a bit more boring if they were just like, we immediately got it, right? And you're like, okay, cool. Like, I hope it works out. But the fact that they are making sure that it's where it needs to be is a good sign. You're totally right.
Well, we always appreciate y'all joining us on our podcast, and we are very excited to check out the new universe that they set up in Peacemakers episode 6. So we'll catch you next time.
See ya.